Thanks as always for listening to Fluff and Crunch. In this week's episode, Chris and I discuss two great science fiction properties, Mass Effect and Starship Troopers. We turn to the source material to talk about what makes these settings what they are, what makes them special and unique, and then we discuss how suitable we think each would be for a tabletop role-playing game and what kinds of systems we think would work best with them. Thanks as always for listening. Make sure to like and subscribe. Join our Discord. Leave a comment. Start a conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback.
Oh, man. Well, how are you today, Chris, now that we're all warmed up?
I'm all right. I'm wishing the weather would improve because it's going to be April in like 3 days. And the weather here is still terrible.
Really? We've had a spell of cold. The pool is not even close to being open, but it's 65 right now. So it's quite nice.
No, we've had the odd time where it seemed like it was going to get better, and then it just goes back to either being cold or just raining, and it's just
in like '80s kid language. It's like psych, and then it yanks the carpet out from under you. Well, let's talk about pleasant things. Let's talk about pleasant made up crap. Like it looks like orbital bombardment on your.
You've jumped ahead. You got to talk about what gaming have you done in recorded, which I don't, was that last Monday? I'm going to say last Monday.
It was last week sometime. So yeah, we had our first session of the second book of our Kingmaker via Castles and Crusades. And during that session, we had our feast, which went well. And then I went over the kingdom management rules, which are pretty crunchy. Like for the Pathfinder fan,
it's the crunchiest thing I've ever had to do in a computer game, and you can't in a role playing game, you cannot do it without a spreadsheet.
No, you can't.
That's
you
how
can't.
Crunchy.
I mean, unless you are a masochist.
Yeah, someone has to have a spreadsheet and sit there with a laptop. Well, I mean, we used to do it in between. We would do the role playing bits, and then in between, we would do me
That's
and Brian would
do
the spreadsheet bits.
We're going to do. I have a spreadsheet to run it, and what we're going to do, I think, going forward is at the beginning of the session, we will do like a month or two role play, and then I'll work out some of the numbers in between. Yeah, it's like crunch porn is what it is. But we went over that, and then we had some in character role play, and we have a realm with a name and all that gobbledygook. So things are moving along. How about you?
Okay, so we did role play, and it must have been Age of Sigmar. Oh, we did the second actual campaign mission of, I don't know, what, I think Shadows in the Mist, whatever the Age of Sigmar
book. I don't know, you could tell me anything. I believe you.
We've done like one session of Age of Sigmar from the book, and then did one with some different characters because I'm picking stuff from like the lore, and then went back to doing the actual story mission. Cool. It went quite well, and we managed to fit it in. There were some good fun bits in. I feel like there's points they're trying to, it's quite good. They actually are actively trying to avoid combat because the first week they did it, they realized their characters weren't very good at combat. And then when we switched to these other two characters, the other two characters were like super good at combat and they can see the difference. So they know that these other people, like they have to be, they've basically got a ranged character with guns and a wizard. So they're like, right, we cannot get into melee. We have to either one-shot people straight away.
Please stay away so we can destroy you.
Or we have to be sneaky or use illusions. So there was this really cool thing where like they broke into this, what did they break in? They broke into this warehouse and they were like sneaking around, and then they had to like get downstairs, and there's all these people there, and they'd worked out there was this giant crate and they knew what was in the crate. So Brian did an illusion of this big monster breaking out of the crate. So I was like, and all of the NPCs like fail their tests. So they think it's all real and they're all going and fighting this imaginary thing. And they just like sneak down the bottom, which is really good. Cause if it had been a fight, it would have been a proper slog of a fight, or they would have got killed, one or the other. And they just avoided it. So it was really nice to see them kind of going, right, our characters are not like combat heavy optimized people. We're going to do something different.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. And I see reflections of that, like in Castles and Crusades. Not every character is so like perfectly powerful in all circumstances, or like proficient enough in everything so that whatever, like I like that. That's neat. See, you talk about this Age of Sigmar thing and these Warhammer, it makes me consider them. But then the problem is the next step after consider is buy. So I'm going to have to stop considering those things because anyway.
Or borrow.
Or borrow. Well, no, you know what? If ever I borrow something though, if I like it, I will then buy it. And I'll put my thumb on the scale of liking it, because that's the right thing to do. Anyway.
But yes, as you said, we are not talking about that. We are back to doing one of our third episode, I think now, of talking about literary. This isn't mine. It's not. Actually, mine does have books, but
just call
other
it
properties.
Creative properties.
Yes. So you tend to do books, whereas I have done a kids' TV show.
Yes. You've done, I think, two. You've done at least another video game.
Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway.
Anyway, there we are. So we're going to talk about Starship Troopers behind me and Mass Effect behind you. Yay.
Which I may have mentioned once or twice before.
Yeah. Who would like to go first?
You can go first.
Okay. All right. So here I hate it. There you go. Well, you can't. Whatever. I'm waving the novel around, the Robert H. Heinlein.
Background going, that looks like some really awful Space Invaders thing and not
let's back up let us talk about Starship Troopers. Okay, the first thing I want you to do, and dear listeners, the first thing I need you to do is I need you to erase as best you can all knowledge of Starship Troopers, period.
But
erase it all.
But the film's so good
erase the films. Erase the cartoon. Erase all of it.
That was okay? A cartoon.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. See, look at that. I got deep cuts here. I got some B-list stuff going on, B-side stuff going on here. What I'm doing is I'm going back to the book, which was published originally in the 50s. I want to say 1959, by Robert A. Heinlein, noted and famed science fiction author. It was published in 1959. Heinlein, by the way, was a Naval Academy graduate. So when Heinlein writes about military culture structure,
it's from firsthand experience.
Some foundational military behavioral norms, cultural norms and stuff, he writes from a standpoint of personal experience and study. If you have not read the book, you should read the book. It's typical trade paperback length. About it, you know, 300 some odd pages, 312, a little over 300 pages. And top level, it is about a war in the future between humanity and two different alien species. The skinnies, that's what they're referred to, which are these tall, skinny humanoid people, and the arachnids, the bugs. The vast majority of the book focuses on the war against the arachnids. In fact, it's only in the opening, like the opening chapter, the opening scene of the book depicts a raid on a skinny planet. And they take up almost no space in the story. The vast majority of the story in terms of like the Starship Troopers, you got these science fiction combat troopers and their associated military that fight the arachnids. They fight the bugs. That's the action in the story. The character level of the story is about one person. Primarily, the main character is Johnny Rico, who is this guy who is, he's the son of a wealthy family, and he decides to an extent buck family tradition by going into the military. Now, there's also a powerful subtext or sub theme, whatever you want to call it, in the book about the individual and society rights. Sometimes people get fired up and they say, "Oh, Heinlein was a fascist." Heinlein wasn't a fascist. There is this theme of the relationship between the individual and the state. And there's a differentiation between citizens and just regular people. Like, you can just be a person and you can, you know, grow up in this society. You could be rich, you could be poor, you could be whatever, but you are not a citizen and therefore cannot vote unless you serve. And the rationale for that, there's a very thin bit of commentary about how, like, it's by implication there was some war or collapse of society at some point in the past, and the people who got together and got things back up off the ground were primarily veterans, like people who were clued in enough to handle dangerous situations and knew how to work together in dangerous situations. And so the idea is, like, unless you have actually put your mortal body between society and danger, you have not earned the right to steer how the government works. Okay. Heinlein doesn't say that's a good thing or a bad thing or a whatever thing. It's just a thing in the story.
Yeah.
So the idea is that Rico's family is very wealthy, but they are not citizens. And his father's like, who cares? You don't have to be a citizen. That's stupid. And he goes off and he joins the military. And then the Earth is attacked by the Arachnids and he goes off and serves. And so the book is about his journey through training, which I found in terms of like his perspectives and his experiences, like the types of things he had to put up with and the feeling, it was very authentic. And then he goes off to fight. And then after fighting, he goes to officer candidate school and he goes back. And it's a story of this one individual through this war over time. Now, the thing that's behind me is an Avalon Hill war game from the 1970s. That's actually quite good because you can fight against the skinnies, you can fight against the bugs. And since the bugs, like bugs would do, the bugs have, they do lots of tunnels underground. And the board game, the war game, has this nice mechanic whereby the bug player can build these secret tunnels and has like graphs to work on so that as you range across the terrain, all of a sudden the bugs come welling up out of the ground and attack you and stuff like that. So that in a nutshell is Starship Troopers per this book. And that's it. Not the movie, not the cartoons, none of that. What questions do you have from a role playing standpoint? Because that's obviously
that's the story. So, what is there about the setting which would make this a good setting for a role playing game? In which, as much as you would not want to, everyone would reference the films.
Yeah, that's a problem.
I have never seen the other ones because I know they're terrible. But the first film is iconic and is good. You might not follow. Well, the plot's out.
I will disagree, and I will say that the first movie is iconic because of just how craptacular it is.
No,
the first movie is.
If you go see what most people say about that film, that is not what most. But the vast majority of people say Starship Troopers is a lot of fun. It's very sort of tongue in cheek. Ironic stuff, but they rush like you said, the stuff about the citizen being a citizen and stuff, it's in the film, but it's like it provides a motivation to the character and then they forget about it.
Yeah. And they also in the book though, that piece of the story is not played up later, not directly, because it's immediately more relevant when the kid joins up. Now I'm holding up my pen, which you can see, but probably maybe you can't see. You know, in like Men in Black, the little flashy thing? Pew! I would like to do that. Anyone who would play a Starship Troopers anything, just focus on the book. Now, I don't have any of the old Mongoose. I actually have no Starship Troopers gaming anything except for a copy of that Avalon Hill board game, which that is not my picture. But I have that, and I have the novel. I've never owned any of the role-playing games. And Mongoose, years ago, during the D20 era, did a Starship Troopers role-playing game. I own nothing of it. So I don't know what they did with the setting background. And there are lots of things that you could take by implication from the novel about the setting, like the technology and starships and the way the government works. And, you know, as you and I have often talked about, like, what do people do on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. There's lots of things you can take by implication, but I've read the book several times and there isn't a whole lot that's explicitly stated. Like, you know, it's a military story about this individual. It's not a story about society and this individual is like a vehicle to tell you about it. Society is part of it, but it's not the whole of it. So setting wise, for role-playing purposes, I think you could easily take by implication the stuff that's in the book again. And you could modify just about any, you know, like, not like a Star Trek level type of sci-fi setting, but you could take pretty much any sci-fi game and use it and make up things about, like, what are buildings like and what do cities look like and starships and starports and space stations and stuff like that. And you wouldn't have to stretch. So it'd be easy to do that, I think.
But what makes it stand out? Why would I want to play Starship Troopers game as opposed to just playing Traveler?
I think the world
has more detail, or Star Trek. Or
okay, well, like if you wanted to use, let's say you wanted to use Traveler and you wanted to run a Starship Troopers adventure, I think that if you wanted to play a military focus, like a war focused sci-fi campaign, because Starship Troopers is so iconic as a property, unfortunately, primarily through a terrible movie. If you wanted to play that, I think that you could get a lot of mileage out of it. I personally think that like combat heavy military role-playing game probably doesn't have a really long lifespan. Like, you would play a campaign.
You mean like Alien?
Yeah. Like, you could play because the, think about it, like the type of action that your characters would be involved in, if they were mobile infantry, if they're MI troopers, which is what they're called in the book. If you're an MI trooper, you are mainly dropping onto planets from orbit and you are blowing the crap out of things. And that might get a little old after a while, unless you start, you know, doing the silly things like, you're an MI trooper, but you're being pulled for this like espionage mission. Well, it's like, well, that's not what they do.
Yeah.
Like, these are highly trained troopers who their job is to drop in from orbit and blow the crap out of things. That's it. So I think that you might run out of like utility runway, but I think that a shorter, more defined, like, okay, I have 10 or 12 sessions envisioned, whatever, 8 sessions, and I have a beginning, middle, and end to our military campaign. We're going to retake this planet, or we're on a planet and the bugs attack and we have to get off the planet. And everyone agrees, like, once we get off the planet, our campaign is done. Or once we retake the planet, the campaign is done. If you used a system that enabled you to go back and forth between a more of a explicit, like, character level role playing to like a tactical war game, you know, to account for the fact that the mobile infantry troopers in their armor that enables them to like jump miles at a time and launch nuclear missiles off their shoulders, that kind of stuff, having a like something that could do the job a bit of a war game, I think would be helpful. But yeah, I think it's a terrific property. I don't know, though, if playing like mobile infantry would be something that would have a long lifespan. Like,
you could literally play Starship Troopers within Warhammer 40,000, because if you played as Imperial Guard,
totally,
or like the better versions of them, if you played as like elite Imperial Guard people, yeah, being dropped on the planet fighting against Tyranids are basically a cross between like the aliens from Alien and the Arachnids from Starship Troops. That's straight up what they are.
Just rub the serial numbers off and give them new names, and no one knows the difference.
And then, you know, and then they've added more to that over the years, but essentially that's what they are. So yeah, if I was like, I think that's the thing, if I was looking for system, if I wanted to play that's what I would do. I would just go, I'll just play 40K and you can be Imperial Guards versus Tyranids, and there you go. You're playing Starship Troopers meets Alien.
And who knows,
and your guys would probably die. They would probably all just die straight. Yeah.
Who knows if I mean, or that Warhammer game from a number of years ago, Only War.
Yeah, that's
who knows if they weren't inspired. I mean, given that this novel is 60 some odd years old, and Hyland was a very well known author, who knows?
I mean,
yeah, you're probably right.
Because there are definitely elements when you read, like I said previously, when you read into the Warhammer stuff, it's very clear that actually the Imperium are not nice people. They are basically, you know, relatively, you know, they're kind of borderline fascists, or some people wouldn't say borderline. And again, they're not really saying that's a good or a bad thing. Well, actually, most depends how you read into it.
But you know what I think the problem is, that, and I think this is far more of a contemporary thing, like a very current thing. If an author in fiction writes something, people take that as being, you're promoting this. It's part of a freaking story, you know. I've read this book several times over the last, I think the first time I read it, I was 18. And it's funny, actually, I read it before I went to basic training. And then I read it like a year or so afterward. And I was like, yeah, wow, he really gets it. And then years later, I think I've read it 4 times over the last, you know, bunch of years. And he doesn't even have commentary. Like, you can decide that the world, the government that he has created, the society that he's created within this book, you can decide that it's commentary, but it's actually just story setting. That's all it is. But yeah, if you have not read the book, have you read the book?
No.
Oh, dear sweet Chris, you should read the book. It's excellent. It's a great book. How long is your commute?
Like half an hour.
Okay. So you should get the audiobook and you just listen to it on the way back.
Audiobooks are so expensive.
Okay.
I don't know how they get away with charging what they charge for audiobooks.
I don't know either.
It's criminal.
I don't listen to them. But my point is,
I look at it and think, oh, yeah, I'll get an audiobook. And then you look at the price and go, no.
Yeah. Well, then don't. Go find the novel. Go find the novel at a used bookstore. Buy them. It's an excellent book. It's a really excellent book. It's a great story. There, you know, even if you weren't going to play Starship Troopers, there are a lot of scenes and sequences of scenes and like subparts of the story, like this raid at the beginning, the fight for this planet at the end, the time that he spends in training, the time that he spends on a ship as a new mobile infantry trooper, and like all the things he's learning and all like the how he relates to everybody else. And then when he goes back and he's an officer candidate, like you could yank NPCs aplenty out of that. You could pull scenes and sequences of scenes like that you could repurpose elsewhere. It's just a really good book and it's well written and the characters are interesting. The action is believable and the world that Heinlein built, he works within throughout the story. And if you just avoid all the other versions of the property, you'll be fine. Totally fine. There are no shower scenes in the book.
No. Yeah, I think you might be in the minority of people that don't like Starship.
I don't care. You know what? If I'm the one person and I know I'm right, I do not care. I will look at the crowd, the masses, and I'll say, y'all are wrong. I'm fine with that. Now, I want to hear about Mass Effect because I know doodle about it. I know that it is a science fiction property. I know that Modiphius has announced that they are coming out with a board game for it. I know that there are it gets talked about a lot, so it seems like it's pretty popular. What's the elevator pitch for Mass Effect?
I mean, there's nothing that makes it.
Come on, man, sell it to me. Make it sexy.
Yeah, it's kind of Star Trek time period, like, you know, 500 years in the future, humanity has gone out into the stars.
Okay.
And one of the first things that happens, they fought a war with a particular nation of aliens. And then after that, the war stops. At the time, no one knows why. They eventually explain it over the games. And then at the start of the first game, humanity is being accepted into sort of this alliance of planets, and there's probably a name for it, but I can't remember. And then it feels a bit like Babylon 5 in that they meet and they're based on this big space station. So in the thing, it's called the Citadel. It's this like massive floating. It's so similar to Babylon 5 in that sense. Okay. It's a long, big tube. And inside the tube, you have, you know, it spins as you get gravity on the outside of it. That's the starting thing. So actually, you know, it's an opportunity. You have all that your Earth, you know, the humans have gone out into space now and they're being friendly with these other aliens. And then kind of what happens over these three games is it starts off where there's a race of AI. There's basically these AI android robot-y people that were created by one of the alien races that went rogue and then just start killing everyone. For the first game, you're mostly fighting them.
Okay.
And for the next two games, it's starting to move into this idea of there's these this thing called the Reapers, who are these, they're from much, much further out in space, and they're going to come and wipe everybody out. And then the annoying thing comes by the time
everybody humans or everybody?
No, they're going to wipe out everyone.
Too.
Essentially, when they turn up, I mean, it's a spoiler, but like if you have played the Mass Effect games, you haven't. But when they finally turn up, and it was at the end of the third game, and it's a big build-up, and the Reapers, they turn up, and you're like, oh, I've got to stop them. And their thing was really dumb, because it's like, right, we are going to destroy you before you create AI that destroys yourself. And it's one of the things you're like,
what?
That doesn't make any sense. And that was
we're
the
doing
point
you
where
a
people,
favor.
Yeah, people were a bit like, that's a naff ending. But the thing that made Mass Effect was the combination of the characters and then particularly the story of the second game. The first game, it was all right. It wasn't big. It wasn't massive.
Okay.
It was interesting. Cool ideas. You kind of have, there's quite high levels of technology. So when you played it, you could just be a straight up soldier, just shoot things, or you could be a tech guy who has like little drones, or they blow up other people's shields and stuff. Or you have, they're not psych, they're called biotics, but it's basically telekinesis and doing things to other people. So it made for a nice thing of like there was three different classes and you can sort of play joint classes. But every time you played it, you would always have in the game, it would always be you and two of your crewmates. So in the first game, it was always in between missions, you're back on your ship, the Normandy, talking to your crew, and they were very, very well written. So it's one of those things that, to some extent, what made Mass Effect popular was the characters. Mass Effect 2 then took that, and actually your character, it's weird, they kill your character, you play the same character, you play Commander Shepard. You can make them look what they want. The only thing is they're human. They can be male or female. They can look like whatever you want.
But it's Commander Shepard.
There's always Commander Shepard.
That's where it fits in. That's what fits into the story.
Yeah. And the weird thing is at the start of the second game, you die, and then you get brought back by this organization that you were led to believe in the first game are baddies. They're like a kind of a like a radical human only thing. And then you spend the rest of the game trying to find out something's going on somewhere in space, and you build another crew. And again, the interplay between the crew and the other characters and solving mysteries, it was cool. And at the end of the second game, it was part of the reason why the second game is one of the best computer games ever made. But it's not just me that's, I think that loads of people think that, is that the mission you do at the end of Mass Effect 2, you can lose party members. So you spend, 50 hours getting to know these people, learning their ins and out, their personalities.
And these other people, these are NPCs.
They're NPCs,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But some of them are so well written that, there's ones that, like, literally, that one of the few characters that was in the first game, there's also in the second game, this person called T'Quali. You never see their face. They only have a mask. Because you can have romances with some of these characters. And me and Mika are just like in love with this character. So our character always like gravitates towards that person. And it's not until the third game that you can actually have a proper relationship with them because they just didn't do it. But when you do the final mission, you can lose crew members. So I remember when me and Mika played it, there was one point you have to decide who's going to do what in this final mission out of your crew of like 10. And we messed up on one of the calls and one of our crew members dies on this particular bit. And we're kind of like, oh no, we've paused it. Like, you could go back and reload it, but we didn't. And it's actually possible to, if you do a really bad job of playing through it, if you never build up anyone's like, if you don't do nice things to people, if you don't go and do people's like quests and stuff, when you do the final mission, it's possible to actually, your whole crew dies and you die. And then there was always a part of me, I really quite fancy doing a suicide run where I'm going to badly play it so I can do the final mission and everything. That's a lot of hours of playing to deliberately lose at the end. And then Mass Effect 3 brought back some of the surviving character. Because if your character died, if one of these NPCs died in Mass Effect 2, they weren't in Mass Effect 3.
Wow, okay.
So deliberately, some of the characters from Mass Effect 1 weren't in 2, so they could be in 3 definitely because they needed them to come back. So then 3 has this like mix up of some from 1, some from 2, a couple of new characters, and then building up to this big thing where they dropped the ball on the ending. They 100%, not Game of Thrones final season style, but it was a bit like, that's a bit naff.
When you say ships, you said the Normandy, is the ship action in Mass Effect, is it focused more on like capital ships like Star Trek, or is it more like smaller things, or is it both?
They have both. Your ship is only ever something safe from A to B. So whenever there are ships in the game, it's either cut scenes or, but there are big ships. So these things, where are they? They're up here. These big things, I think these are actually Reapers. These are like giant capital ship size, like alien things that are coming to destroy the Earth. So ship combat would be a thing. It's never in the games. In the games, your ships are there to take you from A to B. And you're always doing squad level combat. You're playing with like 3 people at a time. I think Mass Effect 3 and there was another one, a spin-off, had like a multiplayer aspect where you were in teams against other people. Oh no, you were in teams against like just swarms. So it was like a co-op game. So you could play it online. But it was a combination of like a lot of the alien races are cool. So the Turians are like these straight up just military people. They're a bit boring. But you
have
these people
with their hair. The girl over your right shoulder.
So she's what's called an Asari. It's an entirely female race. There are no men.
Okay.
They still reproduce.
That's like the ZZ Top song, Planet of Women.
Yeah. So because we'd say they were psychics because they're like all of the people in this race are biotics. When they mate, it's something weird. Like two of them like join together psychically and then one of them becomes pregnant. So they like take the DNA from the other person through like a psychic link or something. So they're a really interesting race. The Quarians, who are this race that they basically can't breathe anyone else's atmosphere, so they're always behind masks.
Is that big dude there with the...
The big dude at the top is he's a Turian. They're a military race. Some people really like them. There's a genuinely really big race called the Krogan, who are these massive, big, like hulking guys in huge suits of armor. They were genetically engineered to be a soldier race to fight these AI people that had gone wrong. Okay. But then when they made them too big and too strong. And also they reproduced too quickly. And so then I think it's the character you have in the second game. It turns out at some point you find out he had actually made everyone else calls it the cure, but he'd made a thing to basically, what's the word when they can't reproduce anymore? Sterilize.
Sterile.
So he'd created this thing which sterilized the entire race. So then he becomes like everyone in that, the Krogan, hate this guy. He's this guy here, one of these, uh-huh. one of these cool little aliens. But then the funny thing's like, there's a point where he's singing Gilbert and Sullivan songs in the while he's on the bridge and stuff.
Okay.
So it's a combination. There's a lot of interest in races. The technology's pretty cool. The design is good. The music is good. There's a lot that just sinks, that like really brings you into it.
Where's the name come from?
So a Mass Effect thing is, it's how you do faster than light travel. You have these things called Mass Effect relays, which are basically, I can't remember the science behind it, but it'll be like,
it's all made up anyway.
Exactly. It's all made up, but it'll open a wormhole. So you fly past this thing and it like spins something big and then it creates a wormhole that you jump through. So it's very rare to have ships that can jump by themselves. You basically have to have these Mass Effect relays.
Oh, okay. So it's almost, okay. So it's like a gate of sorts. It's a thing that enables a ship to like slingshot. Yeah. Okay.
You can have really crazy big ships that can do it themselves, but otherwise it's like kind of like Infinity in that sense. You have little ships have to go through a Mass Effect relay.
So these relays are like infrastructure. So if the relays weren't there, or if a set of relays were down, you would not be able to travel a certain way.
At the end of Mass Effect 3, one of your choices is to destroy all of the Mass Effect relays, because I think like doing that will stop these Reapers or destroy the Reapers. But you're stuck with the choice, right? If you do it, you'll save everyone, but you also then send everyone back, hundreds of years.
Yeah, they're locked on their own planets.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
I mean, I can't remember what I chose. I know I heroically went out in a blaze of glory, and you don't know if you're dead or not, but yeah, I think that was my choice.
So it is
kind of weird to separate. What made it good playing it, the second into the third one, was the story and the characters. But then since then, I've read books set in it. And obviously when people bang on about wanting a role-playing game and wanting this board game... You know, they know they're not actually, when you play the board game, you will be replaying part of Mass Effect 3. Yeah. So it will be the characters. But a lot of it is, it's the setting that, you know, people like the setting. There's a lot more to play in.
There's a lot, because of the number of games and because of how rich the story is in the games, and because I know that there are books for it, but I don't know how many, but there is additional canon for the setting that's been created that you're saying there's enough. That if someone wanted to say, we're going to run this as a role-playing game, not as like a war game, board game, that it's there. What do you see, what kinds of things would, if you were in a Mass Effect role-playing game, what kinds of things would your characters do?
I think it defaults to one of those, like Traveler, where you can kind of do it. If you wanted to play a military thing, you jump it back a few years and there's a human Turian war. Or there are other organizations out there. So then you've got war between sort of corporations and things. Or there's these things, the Geth, which are these AI people that are constantly turning up. So you could play it military style. If you wanted to just be more cyberpunk thing, base the whole thing on the Citadel, which is this, massive giant city-sized space station, and just stay there, grafting away, trying to make a living. And there'll be planets where they're more like that. If you wanted to do more an espionage thing, there'll be corporations that are doing espionage and other people. The mix of different characters, like the first game is much more, you'll go into planets where there's not really a lot there and you're sort of shooting some aliens. It's the second one where you start seeing more of, like you're going into planets where there's nasty things going on and there's corporations doing things that maybe they shouldn't be, and they're experimenting on people and you're breaking people out of prisons, and there's all kinds of different stuff in the second and the first one was literally you would drop onto a planet, you would drive this like tank thing to somewhere and go into like essentially a dungeon. So the first one wasn't anything amazing. The second and third one had much more like you'd go to a planet, but you go to an area on a planet which is designed to be a city or a jungle or so. I mean, you could
see there is more that exists, yes, in terms of setting information.
Yeah.
There's more that exists than just this like Reaper war.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's one, okay, so comparing this to Starship Troopers, if there would be a drawback then to Starship Troopers, I mean, it is a military novel where the action is a war. And so there isn't a whole lot about like, well, could you be like, you know, if you were going to travelerify it, could you be a merchant in this? Like, yeah, you could,
yeah,
but you would have to do the heavy lifting of creating all the padding and packaging material that would go around that to make sense of it. You're saying that there's enough world content already that if you didn't, yeah, want to just fight Reapers, there are already things that you could do.
Over the three games, they added in a lot. You know, you get to see a lot of the other races, like planets or home planets, right, or where they live, and planets which are just like a scum planet full of like criminals and so on. So you get a really good idea of the different things that are going on. One of the downsides is in the background, there's this big story thing going on, which then has an end point, which no one knows what happens after that. Because having done Mass Effect 3, where it had this big, you know, galaxy defining moment, the next time they did a game, it was actually, oh, well, before Mass Effect 3 happened, they'll sent a bunch of people off to explore other, it's called, the next one's Mass Effect Andromeda. Right, we've gone to the next galaxy, whatever Andromeda is. So then it was an exploration game. It was, okay, you know, it was different. And there's different, when you get there's different people there who have already gone there previously, and you're doing stuff there. So no one knows what happens in the main, okay, universe after Mass Effect 3.
So you could do like military war, commando, espionage, spy related to military war stuff. You could do exploration. You, yeah, could end up having action and combat with hostile aliens or dealing with like funky alien worlds. All that all, I mean, that's all very, very traveler-ish in terms of the scope of things that, yeah, you can do. And that's nice to hear that there's enough setting content already there that you could employ that.
It's one of those things that like there's nothing that makes it necessarily better than other sci-fi, but people who have played the games are so in love with it. What they want, you know,
gotcha,
they want more.
Yeah.
And we've only had four games, and then we're waiting, you know, the fifth game might be out in a year, 2 years. The thing that bugged a lot of people is that we never got the role-playing game. So the company that did this is BioWare, which is where Dragon Age comes from. Now, we had a Dragon Age role-playing game, and the Dragon Age role-playing game worked with, you know, the fantasy, then became Fantasy Age. Yeah. But when asked about why isn't there a Mass Effect role-playing game, the developers straight up went, because we don't want there to be one. And you're like, well, that just seems like a dick move.
That's
You're stopping people playing. I mean, partly, maybe it's like they want to hold on to the IP and not have someone playing in their playground.
When Modiphius announced that they were doing, I think it's a, is it a, is a co-op board game?
It's a co-op board game, yeah. Set in, I think it's set during, because I was looking, it's set during a part of Mass Effect 3 doing a particular mission on a particular planet. Okay. So it's a very small scale.
Yeah. So, and I know immediately on the heels of that announcement came all these questions about like, well, is a role-playing game included in that license agreement, or could there be, or are there talks? And I mean, obviously Modiphius is, you know, they're a company, they're being, you know, they're not saying, because they've got their plans and they want to do things their way. And that, you know, that's their business, literally and figuratively. So we don't know.
Yeah.
If you were going to run a Mass Effect role-playing game, given the tone and the action and the things, what system would you use?
So there, I have actually done this twice already myself.
Oh, well, then you should know the answer.
No, I've written my own version. So someone did a very, very good conversion using Fate, other than the fact it's in Fate. Someone did it was ridiculous. Someone's done a massive version of like a 5e adjacent, but it's that kind of thing. And they put a lot of time into it. But at the end of the day, 5e is not really the right setting for it. I wrote a conversion. I've done it twice in Cortex. So I think I did it once using, it was either like Leverage or like Smallville. I can't remember which one. But having seen one of them, I was like, ooh, I really like Cortex. I'm going to use it for Mass Effect. And then when Marvel Heroic came out, I then wrote a second conversion and converted all my stuff from the other one. You know, I kept all my art and my text the same. I just then changed the system marginally. And I did it again in Marvel Heroic. I mean, if I did it now, I mean, possibly 2D20 because I quite like, there's bits of it that I'm not sure work as well in 2D20 as I want it to.
Would you, if you were to use 2D20, would you be more inclined to use something like Star Trek Adventures or Homeworld or Infinity?
Like, no, given... if I was doing it, I'd probably take Infinity and work from there.
Okay.
But there's a part of me that actually would go, maybe I'd look at how Star Trek does things and use Discipline, but add in more combat stuff. Because you have this very key kind of, there are three main class roles. You have Warrior, Tech, and Biotic. And you can be good at, really good at one of them, or you can be good at two of them. So that makes you think about disciplines. And then that's how I've done it in the past. And then I've added like a third one for support. I've done those three and added a support thing in and added those kind of as, but that's how combat works. So that's one of the awkward things when you're trying to turn a game, which is primarily like a shooter, into a role-playing game. You suddenly have to start thinking, oh, well, do I want to translate how the game feels when you play it, or do I want to translate the setting and how it works? So that's always the awkward thing. So, I mean, yeah, I never got around to doing a 2D. Or did I start a 2D21? I've written two decent conversions of Mass Effect, and I've probably thought about starting it a couple more times. Yeah. I mean, now I would just be like, whoa, if they've got a license, maybe they can get the board game. But then we've thought that about Skyrim, and they haven't done a Skyrim game yet.
Good point.
So yeah, because they've got the board game does not mean that they have the role-playing license.
Right, right. Or interest in doing it. I mean, it's still that interesting hole in their overall catalog of your not standard, but I'll just use that word, like your standard fantasy world, like a traditional fantasy world. It's just missing.
I mean, to me, if they had the Mass Effect role-playing license, they would make money off it because people would buy it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not true. So 10 years ago, people would go crazy for it. Like, Mass Effect 3 was, it's got to be 10 years ago.
Okay,
you know, the thing behind me is the Legendary Edition. That's like a remake of all three games that they re-released a couple of games ago.
Okay.
The last version, like I said, Andromeda went to another universe, had totally different characters, and didn't do well. Now, there is a Mass Effect 5 coming, Mass Effect 4, I think, which is going to move the story. So I think that moves on the main story. That'll be interesting because then you can do a role-play game based on that. But really, if you did a role-playing game now, you've got this kind of time period. We know what happens up to this, and then we've got this end point where we have no idea what happens after that until Mass Effect 4 comes out. So if a role-playing game was coming, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 3 years away, which is not what people want to hear, but would not surprise me at all. But yeah, it's a cool set. And the books in it have generally been good. There's a handful of comics. There just isn't enough. You know, this at the end of the day, this is four games, a couple of books, a few comics, and that's it. And there's just always been a huge chunk of people who have played it going, you know, I want more.
Because they like it. But I mean, there's enough, if there are enough in those properties or those products so far, if there are enough different kinds of places and enough different kinds of activity, you can build off of that. Like I said, I'll fully admit, like with Starship Troopers, a drawback would be that there is a very limited scope. I actually think, you know, Starship Troopers probably overall, given that Heinlein wrote a book, that's it. You know, I actually think it would probably be best as a war game like that.
Yeah.
And either at the tactical or operational level, maybe something at the strategic level, if you want to, you know, but if you wanted to express Starship Troopers as it's written in the book in a game, you would do that at the tactical and operational level of war. That's it. And you would run it as a war game, or you run it maybe as a minis game. And I know that those things have existed. I don't know if they still exist, I don't know. It sounds to me like Mass Effect has more to it story-wise that you could build more. You'd have more of a launch pad for an RPG. Okay? The question would be, what kind of action and activity would you most likely to be engaged in, and therefore, what kind of system would you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the thing. If you know what kind of game your players want to play, it makes it easier.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, there are a reasonable amount of sci-fi games out there that would do a reasonable job. Yeah. The thing that throws it is the kind of how tech powers work in the thing. It's almost like having almost like it's a technology version of psychic power. So you need a game that can handle. It's not so much psychic powers in terms of mind stuff. It's more telekinesis and doing stuff like that. And that's where a lot of systems you look at. Like, so if I wanted to use Infinity, I have to add on a whole bunch of stuff that does not exist.
You're talking about like you're using these telekinetic abilities to like affect the physical world around.
Yeah, yeah. You literally, you know, you throw things at people or you drag people out.
So you'd have to have a system whereby like you'd be able to determine how much you can move, how much you can pick up, how far you can.
That's why Marvel Heroic was great. Because
I see. Yeah,
it was just a power. Marvel Heroic worked fine because you either have tech, you know, in Marvel Heroic, you had like a handful of powers and you use those powers to replicate different things. So if you had tech powers, it worked fine. And if you did, you know, so a superhero system works quite well for this, except you don't want the top, you know, it's not high level supers. It's there's very specific superpowers you have. So then a superhero, but Marvel Heroic, taking the basis of Marvel Heroic, that worked fine. In 2D20, there isn't a system at the moment you could go, right, I can use that. You would have to create a bunch of stuff yourself. Just like you did when you did, Aris, you had to create your own stuff. So it would be like that.
Okay. That makes sense.
So that, that'd be the issue. So yeah, there isn't one that you can just go, oh yeah, that system. I mean, that's why I could see people have done it in generic systems. And that's why I can see someone actually go, oh, actually, I'm going to do 5e because 5e works off classes and this has classes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write a class based, and maybe it wasn't, it was a D20 version. I don't know if it was 5e or not. But you know, it is class based. So a class based system makes sense. Doesn't have to be class basis, but you have to be able to have powers.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the key thing.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm interested. I mean, I'm curious about it as a property. I'm not, I don't, co-op board games are interesting to me, but my time and space to play them is limited. So I don't know if I'd be interested in it. Who knows? But cool. I want to learn more about it. I'm not interested in playing a video game, but I want to learn more about it now. Anyway, it sounds interesting. I think it sounds interesting. Like I said, I want to learn more about it because sci-fi is, it's so odd. I mean, I run fantasy more than anything else in the last 15, 20 years, but I like sci-fi. I will turn to sci-fi for my own entertainment first. So I'll go learn more about it. Sounds cool.
Yeah, Mass Effect's is good. I mean, like I said, there are books. I think reading the books without having played any of the games, I think there would be so much you would miss. I think they'd be like, I don't see the appeal here. When you've played the games, then the books, you know, it's not using the characters from the books, but it's like, you know, a guy that turned up in this scene and he's talking to someone who's that scene, but it's in places you know. So, you know, with organizations you've heard of, I actually feel like just reading them without having played them would be like, yeah, it'd make a lot of sense. But yeah, like if you wanted to get the games now, the Legendary Edition, you can get that for free on Xbox Live. So it didn't cost you if you wanted to get that. So but if you've never played the games, play the games. Games are amazing.
For the folks listening or watching, if you have played Mass Effect and you have maybe modded it for an RPG table, let us know. We're always curious about that. And what are your thoughts about now that I think the dust has been kicked off Mass Effect as a property because of the Modiphius announcement, at least to some degree. What are your thoughts about, would you do that in the future? For those of you who aren't familiar with this, does it sound interesting? Does it sound like something, like visually it looks cool. Looking at your picture there, I'm like, I see action and excitement. That looks cool. But dear listeners, what do you think about it? And what would you do with it? And then
do you agree with Jeremy that the Starship Troopers film is terrible? Because I've never met anyone that thinks it's bad. Everyone I know is like, Starship Troopers is classic.
It's terrible.
Absolute classic.
It's brilliant. Classically horrible.
And it's got Neil Patrick
Harrison.
Not horrible
in like a ha-ha good bad way, like something like Cannonball Run. It's just bad.
It's just great.
A bad movie.
It had Neil Patrick Harris in it just after he quit being Doogie Howser.
He was terrible. He was absolutely, oh my gosh, one of the last lines, he's afraid. Oh my God, I almost gagged on dinner.
He was bad. And the acting's not good. I mean, like Denise Richards is terrible. Yeah, I'll give you the acting in the film. They got a bunch of people that could not act.
None of them.
I love that film.
None of them.
It's cheesy and fun and awesome and so many good bits in it. So much good stuff.
No.
But yeah, not the acting. Acting is terrible.
And the MI troopers are in these like enclosed like gym suit armor, like almost like tank suits where they can jump and they show them. And no. And that is where we end, Chris. You're about to cross the line here. That's a bad movie. That's a damn terrible movie. They tried to make it good by putting Michael Ironside in it, but it was bad.
You don't like any films. I don't think you've liked a film that was made since the 80s.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, I feel like it is.
I thought the Dune movies are pretty decent. I thought the Top Gun Maverick was pretty good.
You're naming films that are remakes of films that came out of the 80s. Maverick was great. Maverick.
See, and you shut your cake hole. let me think. Is there any original movie that I've seen recently? I'm sure. I just don't go see movies because so many of them are bad. If they were good, I would go.
You can't. You don't know that until you've gone.
Dude, I don't have to eat dog turd to know it's not good.
I know when I go and see a DC film or a Sony Spider-Man film, it's going to be bad.
Yes, and that's why I don't go.
I still go because I like going to the cinema. I love going. Like tomorrow, we are going to watch Godzilla X Kong.
Oh.
Because we know we will enjoy it. Because
hold me back.
How much more could I want in a film than Godzilla and Kong fighting other giant monkeys? With Kong with a cybernetic power fist.
Well, I you know what? When you put it like that, I don't know.
See? It's just great.
All right.
But I like popcorn films, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, everyone, subscribe, join the Discord. Comment. What else?
Comment below if
comment,
you're on YouTube.
That's right. Right.
If even you're on a podcast, I don't know how you do that, but if you're on a podcast, you know, leave a review or something.
There you go.
Suggest this to your friends.
That's right. Use it as a stocking stuffer for family at Christmas time. Okay. There we have it.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again. Have a great day. We look forward to talking with you.